Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, July 1st, 2013, and you are listening to episode 57 of our show. My name is Rob. With me in the studio, as usual, is Jason.
Hey,
how's it going, sir?
It is going very well.
Good. And we have another one of our good friends on the line, as extra special super guest with us today. We have a game designer, an artist, a Renaissance man extraordinaire. We have Mr. Danny Devine on the line. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
We are excellent, and we are so happy to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me. That was a great intro. Best I've ever had.
Well, I aim to please. And it's well-deserved, sir. Danny is a good friend of the show here. We became friends just thanks to the podcast, really. You started tweeting at us and commenting on the show, and we just kind of started talking more and more. And so we just wanted to give you a shout-out and hang out with you for a little while, man. So thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The show is great. I heard about it through Flip the Table and have been a fan ever since.
Great, yeah, and we love the guys over at Flip the Table, too. They're good friends.
Did you hear the commercial on their show?
Yes, I think I heard the... Nice. I don't know if it was before the commercial or not. He might have just mentioned it offhand, and I was looking for podcasts at the time.
Oh,
and
that's
sounded like an awesome idea, so...
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
Yeah, we love those guys. They're good pals.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Danny Devine, the game designer, please.
The game designer part of me, it's, I don't know, I guess probably like most guys that design games, I've been doing it ever since I can remember. I don't think my parents have a complete game in their house because I've harvested for parts.
Yeah.
But, I've only taken it seriously probably for the last, year or so. Before then, it was just kind of, you know, I design a game, play it with my mom and my sister, and then put it in the closet.
Yeah. Okay.
So now I'm taking it seriously. I found a nice group of guys at work that are willing to play test and help me. And it's, really motivated me to actually finish some games.
That's excellent. Yeah. Having that kind of support system is really important, I think.
Yeah.
The only support system I have is this idiot in front of me.
Well, actually, that's not true. The real support system that we have is the guilt from all the listeners if we don't follow through with stuff.
Well, that's even more
so
influential.
True.
Which is kind of why we started the show.
Yeah, right.
Keeps you accountable.
Right. Indeed. And you have just recently sold your game Mobtown. Is that correct?
Correct, yes. To Fifth Street.
Fifth Street, yeah, our buddy Phil Kilcrease over there at Fifth Street Game, whom we talked to at Gen Con last year, and has made some fantastic games, and yours is next on his list.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Tell us about Mobtown.
Mobtown, which the name implies, is about mobsters. It is pretty much an area control slash set collection game. One of the big draws, I think, is the way that the city is built, which is probably what helped it win the map builder contest.
Okay.
There's 20 property cards. They have 5 different property types on them, and every card has an arrow in the corner that points either up, down, left, or right. And what you do is you place the first card down. The arrow tells you where the next card goes. And you kind of keep following the arrows until you have the set number of cards. Like in a 3-player game, it's 13 cards.
Nice. Right on.
And so what that does is it creates really unique, interesting shapes. And, you know, the way that the restaurants or the factories are clumped together is different every time you play.
Cool. And so it won you a design contest on the Game Crafter, right?
Correct, yeah.
A map design or map building contest?
Map builder.
Okay. I'm always curious, we are always curious, Jason and I, about how you make your connections with your publisher. So did Phil find Mobtown thanks to that contest, or how did you with him?
Actually, I was working on the game for about a month before the contest was even announced. And it just so happened to be a perfect match.
Oh, okay.
So I really started kicking it into gear to make sure I'd get it finished in time. And at the same time, I recently discovered a friend of mine at work, a coworker, his name's Joe Kissenweather, and he had won a contest at SaltCon the previous year to get his game published by Griffin. But at the same time, he had met Phil in the process. And when he went to SaltCon this last year, he asked if he could take my game along with him. When he had a break, he went over and showed Phil because he thought it would be something he would be interested in. And sure enough, he was.
Right on. That's excellent, awesome, man. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, man. I saw that, correct me if I'm wrong, but originally the mobsters were people. And when you signed with Fist Street, you guys kind of rethemed it to where it's like anamorphic mobsters. Is that correct?
Correct.
I mean, yeah.
That's a weird word to say.
Anthropomorphic.
Anthropomorphic. Yeah.
But it's a really good fit. Like that's fun, you know? Like I've seen some of the drawings you put on Twitter and that is
Oh, yeah.
Are you doing the artwork for it?
I am. Yeah, I get to do the artwork again. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we should say, I mean, I mentioned in the intro, but you are also an incredible artist, we should say. I mean, because Jason and I were both impressed when we started seeing your sketches for Ghost Love Candy, another game we'll talk about here in a second, but also then looking at the sketches that you've done for your Mobtown characters. And we are thoroughly impressed.
Oh, thank you.
Thoroughly.
So much so that I guess we might as well announce this here that the game I pitched, I guess that was last week's show or 2 weeks ago?
Two weeks ago.
The game that I pitched on the show, Rocket Wreckers, you are actually going to do some early prototype artwork here for me, or some artwork for me for the characters for the prototype.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
And kind of like your pitch-ready version of the prototype.
Yeah, yeah. The same idea that I'd done with my friend Johnny for Frankenstein's Legacy and that Jason has done with his artist for several of his products now. Protos, yeah. So thank you for that. I am so happy with the progress of the artwork. And I don't think I've tweeted any of them yet, but right now on the Hyperbole Games Gen Con prototype preview, if any of our listeners want to go there and find my entry there for Rocket Wreckers, you can see one of Danny's sketches. It's an early version of a sketch. It's in progress right now, but I am thrilled. I could not be more happy with what you've done so far. So thank you so much. I really wanted to make sure I said that.
Oh, you're welcome. And I actually want to point out, anyone that's listening, if they are about to start dealing with an artist or seeking an artist, I would suggest hitting up Rob for some ideas on how to go about it, because the Pinterest board that you've set up and the feedback that you've given me is better than I usually get when I do freelance stuff. So it's been helpful.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you very much for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife introduced me to Pinterest, and she was pinning pictures of you know, how she wants to remodel our kitchen, or you know, how what kind of built-in she wants in the bedroom, and on and on and on, and I'm kind of like, that's really nice, honey, that's pretty. And then it just kind of occurred to me that it could also work really, really well for this. So
yeah, I've stolen your idea and I've used it too, and it's great to work with an artist. Like, hey, here's all the stuff, here's notes in there, take a look at it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, you know, my wife's been doing Pinterest for a long time too, and it's just, I'm the same way. I'm like, that's awesome. I had no clue. And then I think the first time I heard about it was Grant Rodiek, or I don't know how to say his last name.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. I think he mentioned it on a podcast or something. I was like, that's a really cool idea.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? Maybe I heard it from him first and didn't even realize
that's probably how
that's probably what happened.
Oh, I don't.
Wow. Way to call Rob out on that. Good work.
Thanks, man.
I didn't do that.
It's okay.
You're getting me in trouble.
No, Grant is a very knowledgeable game designer.
He sure is.
He's always willing to give some advice, and I've talked to him several times now about the Kickstarter I'm going to launch, and he's been super helpful giving feedback on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are an artist, sir. Last week we talked in depth about kind of our feelings about how important it is to have good, appropriate artwork that complements your game without negatively affecting the feeling of your game, or, you know, just trying to make sure all that stuff syncs up. And do you, as an artist, you have more thoughts, more comments to give us on that? I mean, what was your reaction to that, or what do you think?
I think it is important to, I mean, make sure you know who your audience is, because you were specifically talking about like the Damsels game with doing, you know, pinup art, or what kind of art do you use for it. So, I mean, you want to make sure you have appropriate art, but I mean, having good art definitely helps, you know, catch people's eye and remember a game. So, I think it's important.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. Jason just, I don't mean to interrupt, I'm sorry. Jason just gave me a look of fear because we heard some thunder rumbling outside.
And so we're sitting on the second floor wearing lightning rods on our heads.
Right.
So that's pretty awesome.
So hopefully we don't have a power outage here while we're recording, but we'll hope for the best. What do you look for when, I guess I should say it this way. When you're at your local game store or you're looking online, what kind of artwork catches your eye? What to you stands out and says, oh, hey, that's unique, that's different, that's something that I want to see more of?
I'm a huge fan of cartoon art and stuff in general. Mm-hmm. So that tends to grab my eye more. But, you know, a lot of games have some, you know, really good art, but they start to run together after a while. Like, you know, like Magic the Gathering, beautiful artists. They have awesome artists, but after a while they kind of run together. So when you find something that stands out and looks different, that's what grabs me. I mean, art is one of the first things that grabbed me for a game. And then if the mechanics sound interesting, that's what keeps me there.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree with you 100% on Magic. I mean, yeah, the artwork is beautiful, but you look at enough of those cards and they all just kind of end up looking the same.
Right, but I mean, they're trying to hit that kind of that theme they have, but it is kind of like give us something like really unique.
Yeah,
you
know?
It's probably not fair to pick on Magic because I mean they kind of started it and then everyone tried to look like them.
That's true.
So yeah,
yeah. Then again, I mean, Magic is so successful; it's okay to pick on them a little bit.
They're so successful that they trademarked the word tap. So,
yeah, right.
Yes, that's true.
So let's all turn our cards to the right and say yes. Screw them. It's okay. No, I used to play Magic a lot, so it's a good game.
Yeah. Well, we teased this before, but tell us about Ghost Love Candy. That's one you're working on right now.
It is. Yeah, that one was. It kind of just started out as throwing out an idea on Twitter about. I was just seeing if anyone thought it was an interesting idea to have a party where ghosts were possessing the guests to make them do things. And pretty early on, someone tweeted, it was like, what if it was kids on Halloween so they could eat their candy? And I was like, that's a brilliant idea. I like that. It's funny and hilarious. I think if it's done the right way, it won't be offensive, which is what I'm trying to do.
Oh, sure.
Oh, and the artwork certainly sells that. I mean, that's the artwork is just perfect for for what you just described. I think the artwork hits that to a T, at least what we've seen so far.
Sure, sure.
Right. So far, I just have what I call my proto people. It's kind of simple prototype people that I've made, but I've gotten good feedback. So I don't know. It might not change.
Sure. It is funny because sometimes what artists consider, just my rough sketch, people are like, well, that's really good.
Right. That's kind of what I've got so far.
You definitely, for your kind of your proto sketch, you do a lot of detail on that.
Yeah.
Because like I think about the art that I get from my artist, Brendan, that I work with. I'm not dogging him. He gives me like his sketches are less detailed than the first draft. Mm-hmm. When he kind of gives them to me in just that blue outline. You know what I'm talking about. I've seen it before.
Seen it.
So, I'm sure every artist's process is different. I was just thinking of that, you know, that it shocks me to hear you say, oh, those are just, yeah, I was just. Just trying to do like some, you know, prototype for what I really want to draw.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. That's just, I've gotten pretty used to Adobe Illustrator and it's basically just using simple shape tools and then doing quick little drawings to put devil horns or angel wings or whatever on it.
Yeah.
Okay. But, the game itself, everyone is playing as ghosts and they all have a card in front of them that tells them what their favorite type of candy is to their least favorite type. So maybe you really like chocolate and you hate peppermint, but the guy next to you loves peppermint and doesn't like lollipops. So the idea is you have a hand of cards, 1 through 9, and 6 random trick-or-treaters are going to be put out in a row in front of everyone. And at the beginning of every round, they're all given a piece of candy, which is just like a cube at this point, a colored cube.
Sure.
And then to start the round, everyone chooses a card from their hand, places it face down. Once everyone's done that, you reveal it, and whoever has the highest number gets to place their card first so they can take the candy they want from the kid and resolve whatever ability they might have, such as the cowboy lets you take candy from him as well as a kid to the left or right of them.
Okay.
And they all have various powers. One of the popular ones is the devil, which is you propose a trade to any player, and if they don't accept, you both lose a piece of candy. So it's in your best interest to make a good deal, or you're both kind of get hosed on it.
Nice. Deal with the devil.
Right.
Yeah.
And then every kid has a number up in the corner, kind of similar to Smash Up, how they have that break point.
Sure.
And once you reach that point, the kid's eaten too much candy and is sick. So if you were the last person to play a card there, it was your fault. So you have to put the kid in front of you as negative points at the end of the game.
Oh,
nice.
That kind of balances out people that just keep playing high cards. You know, so you want to play low cards sometimes in order to avoid making kids sick.
Nice.
Right on. So just cards and cubes, huh?
Cards and cubes.
Man, I like a game like that. Compact, yeah. And easy, and that's good stuff.
It's playing really well. I've play tested it with quite a few people now, and it's going great. And it plays in about 20 minutes, which is nice.
That's great.
That is nice. That's a good time for, especially for mm-hmm. a game like that. Like that's 15, 20 minutes is good.
Yeah. How many players?
2 to 6, actually.
Oh, great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right on.
Good. Good stuff. Well, we should probably move on. I think we're ready. If you guys are, we're ready to move on to our mechanic of the week.
Sounds good.
All right. And Mr. Divine, sir, I think you have one ready for us.
I do. The one I thought of was hidden scoring. And what I'm thinking along the lines of are specifically in like Small World and a game called Evo.
Okay.
Where the points that you get, everyone hears, you know, like at the end of that round, you get 13 points. Everyone hears that you got 13 points, but you take the little tokens that have the numbers written on them and you keep them face down. So it's kind of like an out of sight, out of mind thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a really, I mean, unless you're playing with someone like Rain Man that can remember everyone around the table, you know, no one's really going to remember who's winning for sure. They're just going to have like an idea.
Yeah.
That's two other decent examples that are Stone Age and Dominion.
Yeah.
Age, it's almost impossible to remember what you have, let alone what everyone else has
right.
for scoring. And then Dominion, you have to pay very close attention. And I don't know about other people that play Dominion, but I know myself and Rob and his wife and my wife, when we play our hands so fast that you really have to be paying attention to see,
right. I can't
keep track. She just dropped three provinces.
Like, yeah.
Right, yeah. I play Dominion online mostly now, and that one's really fast. You're playing against computers, and you know you put the speed up because you don't want to see their turn.
Right. Yeah.
But you got to start paying attention. But yeah, that's definitely an example of hidden scoring too.
Yeah. So and Small World is a good example too, because to further make that difficult is because you get those coins that are, what are they, 1, 3, and 5? I think.
1, 3, 5, and I believe they go up to 10 in 10. Small World.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, and sometimes you have to make change, you know, because you run out of ones, and so you gotta turn on all your ones to get a 5 out of the box, and so even then it gets even more crazy because you're making change, everyone else is making change, and it's hard to keep track of, you know, just by things that they have in front of them that are all face down. You really have no idea what they've got there.
Right, and it's and they're all the same size, which I mean, there's positives and negatives to it.
Mm-hmm.
But some things I do like about it is, and this is going to give away my secret to any of my friends that are listening for Small World, but I like to overplay when someone has a good turn. They get like 13 points, and I'll point it out and say, they got 13 points, they're winning. I'll make a huge deal out of it. Mm-hmm. And then the next two or three rounds, I'm getting 12 points and just being really quiet about it. It works out.
That's awesome. Nice. Sneaky. let's talk about those positives and negatives. What are some positives about that in terms of how a game plays with hidden scoring?
I think off the top of my head, some people really want to see the leaderboard, right? Some people, when they're playing games, they want to know, I'm winning right now, I'm losing right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I like the hidden better. because, you know, it's a surprise at the end. But yeah. It does kind of suck, too, when you're like, I think I'm winning. And then you, like, get last.
Yeah.
You realize you're actually terrible. But you know what? You had more fun during the game, right? Because you thought you were winning.
That's true. It keeps you interested.
Yeah, I feel like one of the features of that with that kind of idea is it encourages you to play your game a little bit separately from everyone else, because if you can see everyone else's scores right now, it's more likely, I think, to affect your strategy, because you're thinking, oh gosh, that guy's got a whole lot more than me, and that guy's got a whole lot more than me, but that guy, he's way behind me, so I can focus on the other two that are ahead of me, and it can really change the kinds of decisions that you're making in the game. Whereas if you have no idea what anybody else's score is, then you might really just kind of focus on yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
And Small World, of course, Small World is all about interacting with each other, so less so in that example, but I don't know. It's just, that's kind of the first thing that occurred to me there.
Well, one thing in games that kind of can be frustrating is the pick on the winner thing in a mm-hmm. 4-player game, and one person is clearly leading, and then everybody's like, let's take them out.
Yeah.
You know, I see that happen in a lot of games. And Small World would be a great game for that to happen in.
Yeah.
If everybody knew you were way in the lead.
It's true. Right?
Because it's a game where you're trying to kill each other. So
everyone could gang up on that game.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that happen in Risk I don't know how many times. Like, all right, sure. Let's just all get the big guy. And then he ends up taking last place,
mm-hmm.
even though he was the superpower. And it's kind of like, how is that? That's not fun.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about that. It's kind of a fundamental difference there. Because Small World and Risk are kind of, on a basic level, similar concept. Although, yeah. You know, the area control stuff, but by separating that scoring idea, that's a pretty key fundamental difference on how those two games are approached and how the strategy happens in that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And some of the, you already kind of mentioned that, it can be kind of annoying during the game to have to make change and stuff like that. And it when you have the little tokens like that, it just... it adds a lot of components to the box, which, especially if you're self-publishing, can be an issue.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I'm working on a pitch that I'm going to do in a couple episodes here, and it's got hidden moves in it.
Hmm.
And the way I figured out how to achieve that was with using extra counters to track distances and stuff. And I was thinking the same thing when I was looking at GameCrafter to make the prototype. I was like, well, gosh, this is going to be stinking expensive. So the same type of thing. You know, whenever you're going to be pumping extra pieces in, you have to kind of question, do I want to do that bad enough to make it cost a bunch more?
Right,
and will that
right.
be a detriment to a publisher if you try and sell it to them? Yeah. Are they going to say, you know?
Yeah, it depends on who you're going to. I bet you for a handful of them, it would be.
Yeah, well, and I mean, too, it depends on the type of game that you're trying to push. I mean, if it's a big box game, right?
Sure,
mm-hmm. It should work, but I mean, if you've got, you know, Ghosts Love Candy, right, which is the idea is it's a card game with some cubes, and you're right. like, but then also I need to put in, like, you know, 75 or 100 extra chits to count this, you know, people might be like, maybe we should think about how we're going to do this game.
Yeah, it makes it less appealing.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, boy, that's a tough call. It can also have a lot of effect on just kind of the style of the game that you're making, you know? Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you kind of brought it up earlier with Small World, how a lot of times you kind of feel like you're playing your own game. You don't really know what other people are doing. So you're just, and a lot of people, you know, accuse Dominion of being that too. There could be something to that the hidden scoring kind of, it does kind of promote you to just focus on your own thing and kind of ignore the other players to an extent.
Yeah, you know, and that's an interesting contrast between Dominion and Small World is Small World is so much of that is about interacting with the other players. I mean, that's most of the game. So the hidden scoring aspect of it, you're kind of playing your own game, but the game forces you to also play against your opponents and mess with them.
Yeah.
Whereas Dominion, it's almost a solitaire game in a lot of ways.
And the thing about Dominion is, you know, they try and force some interaction.
But it always feels a little artificial.
And it's annoying. Like, you know, the card that makes you, there's that card that makes everybody discard a card.
The Militia.
I get actively annoyed when people play that card.
Yeah.
I'm playing my own game here. Just try and win.
Yeah.
Don't screw with me.
Yeah.
That card's not even that helpful. It's just annoying.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. And I ran into the same thing with Explorers, that there wasn't enough player interaction. But
yeah.
having one or two cards when you do that, it's just annoying because mm-hmm. the person's not used to it. You know, with Small World, it's like bash your face in the whole time. The only thing that's not together is the scoring. So
yeah,
that's really interesting to think about that way.
Right.
The nice thing with Dominion is you can, you know, there's so many cards, you can just take those out.
That's true.
Like I never play with the, if I want my wife to play with me, I take out all the mean cards, as I call them.
Yep.
So we're basically just playing solitaire, then she loves it.
We actually take the militia out too, so that we can get rid of the moat and add two more interesting cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I should do that.
Especially next time we play together.
Yeah, right. We always play with the, yeah. Good thunder.
That's a lot of thunder.
Dude, did you actually hear that? I wonder if the
yeah, big time.
Listeners heard that too.
That's yeah. funny. Wow.
Yeah, we had a heck of a storm last night, and the power was out most of the day here at my house. I was a little worried when I got home from work that we wouldn't have power. So,
holy cow.
Yeah. Well, moving on then. Hidden scoring. I think that's a good subject. Interesting thing for people to think about when they're coming up with ways to score their games, and that stuff. But we should move on to practicing the pitch. And Mr. Divine, sir, you are also going to pitch a game for us tonight, correct?
Correct. It is generous to call it a pitch, per se. I'm going to kind of throw some ideas into a blender and hope that you guys give me a good smoothie back.
All right. Sounds awesome. Good.
All right. So this is I'm going to first pitch the main little mechanic that I've been interested in for a while. And okay. I've never really been able to make a game completely out of it.
Sure.
And that is, are you guys familiar with Punnett squares when you're talking about genetics and stuff like that?
Yeah, with the breeding the peas or whatever?
Yes, exactly.
It's like Mendel or somebody? Who was that?
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I took an anthropology class once and we learned about that.
Yeah, I learned about this, yeah, I don't know,
I will,
high school or whatever, and
I will do a Wikipedia link to this, but okay. It's Punnett squares or Punnett squares. It's how do you,
yes.
Do you remember how to spell it?
I do actually. I have the Wikipedia page up. P U N N E T T.
Cool. So okay. Feel free to look that up, listeners. It's a pretty cool thing. So
the basic idea behind it is it's kind of a diagram to give you an idea of what the probability of certain genotypes when you're mixing, like say eye color, for example, brown is a dominant color over blue.
Right.
So if your father had brown eyes and your mother had blue eyes, her genes were probably blue, and your dad's could have been brown blue. So the probability of you getting blue eyes once you fill out the chart is 50%. If you basically have four squares put together. You put one set of genes on the top and a set of genes on the left and right, and then you kind of fill in the squares where they cross over, and it gives you an idea of what the probability of carrying over your genes to an offspring are.
Oh, right. Okay.
And some of the probabilities are really interesting. When,
right.
You know, they're not what you expect necessarily.
Especially when you start, you know, you get, you know, two things that don't have matching genes, like if you had, I don't know, you're just calling it, you know, blue, green, red, brown. I don't know. I don't even know if that's possible. When you have stronger mixes, you get a really crazy probability in there.
Yep.
Hmm.
So that is something, that idea of a game based off of trying to get a specific offspring out of two different parents, but you're kind of picking and choosing to try to get the best probability of getting what you want is something I've been trying to build into a game for a while. And it's tough to do, but I've kind of dumbed it down to something in my head, which I threw out on Twitter earlier, and people aren't thrilled with the idea of a fish store, of breeding fish in an exotic fish store.
Okay.
So I am 100% open for a new theme, but what I have right now, it's a co-op game where everyone's working in an exotic fish store, and you're trying to, let's just say, make $1,000 before the end of the month and the store closes. So you make this money by having, you have customer cards and they have specific orders for types of fish that you want, that they want. And depending on if you have those fish available, you can try to breed them for free, or you can sell fish that you have to, I don't know, the fish bank, the big box fish store. I have
the
no
fish
clue.
Bank.
The fish bank. We'll call it that. You could sell it. You could sell it to them and hopefully still try to mark it up enough. So I really want this genetics thing to be a core. I just don't know if it's interesting enough to carry a game on its own, but you know, it could be applied to a lot of different things. Like, you know, you could be breeding dragons, and specific dragons are able to attack villages in different, you know, climates or something. Or,
oh, sure. Yeah.
I don't know. Just so that's kind of, I guess I'm pitching a weird scientific mechanic more than a game.
It's a great mechanic.
Yeah, it's cool.
Here's a thought. This might be totally off the board here. It could be a bad idea. I have had many of those, but what if, because I agree that maybe you action it up a little more, you know, make it a little more like dragons attacking villages. That's definitely a bit more action.
Yeah, that immediately sounds more appealing than a fish store.
I had a thought about what if at the beginning of the game, I don't know if this is board game, card game, whatever, but you lay out like a map-ish type thing, not necessarily a map, but like a series of, like, I hate to say like a dungeon, because I don't think, I'm not trying to pitch a fantasy idea, but let's just say an obstacle course, but like a real world obstacle course, right? And you're working as a team to attempt to breed things into the, like, for instance, a springy tail so that it can get over this first section, right? And then to get up the next thing, it's going to need to be able to climb. So you want to have that. And then now there's an underwater part. So it's going to need to be able to breathe underwater. So you're constantly trying to give it the best traits, and you've got to be looking a couple steps ahead because it doesn't happen all automatically. Right.
Correct.
And so what you could do is, you know, give different abilities to each player, working together with one animal, right. Or maybe two animals so that they can work as a team. So there's a thought for kind of make the theme a little wacky and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the same, that's actually an interesting idea. I have thought of the newest, I don't know, I'm calling it a breakthrough. Sounds like I'm doing something special. I've thought of the dice. The way to do this is because each, the mother and the father would each have, we'll just break it down to two genes that you're trying to, you know. They have one specific trait, like maybe it just describes what the color of their fur is or whatever.
Right.
And that's broken down into two genotypes or whatever, the dominant and the recessive gene. So you'd have the mom who would have two genes at the bottom, and the dad would have the same thing. And you'd have two D6 dice that, they have basically two dominant, two recessive, and we'll just say two wild to give you a chance to pick, so it's not so random all the time.
Sure.
And then on those, since the male is the one that determines the gender, that information would be on the male dice, and the female dice could have something extra, like a dot to say whether or not you have more offspring if you roll that side up.
Okay, yeah.
So it could make some interesting combinations. So basically you take the... You know, you take the pink dice, whatever it is, line it up on the card to see what trait you get from that one, and then the blue dice on the other one to see what trait you got from the father, and that creates the card that you take for your next generation.
Yeah, I like that idea of putting dice into the mix to add a little bit of randomness to it. That's
which is what is so interesting about it to me is the whole, I mean, it plays up the probability and how random it actually is.
Yeah, yeah. The first theme idea that occurred to me here, and again, you know, if I'm off base, oh well, that's what we do here. I was thinking of it as, you know, because I so often like think in terms of two-player stuff. I was thinking about what if one player is bacteria, is some kind of evil virus that's trying to evolve to take over a body, and the other player is working as the immune system to try and and evolve different antibodies to combat against the virus that's invading the body. And so it kind of becomes about not just evolving new little bugs to fight against each other, but also then to be about area control, to kind of take over. Maybe the game board where you're placing cards or something is the shape of a body and it's got a grid on it, and you're trying to be the first person to take over 2/3 of the body of the victim.
That could be interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that done before for sure.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of how you can make it a 4-player game. Right. I mean, I guess you could have each player be their own strain of infectious bacteria.
Yeah. I mean, I would think you could have, for the 2-player game, you could have 2 different strains or maybe even 3 different strains of bacteria and then 3 different things the immune system can do to fight, mm-hmm. and just randomly deal those out. And if you have 4 players, you randomly deal 2 and 2, right?
Sure. So, yeah. Hmm. Right. So that's another option.
The last option, and then since we're just throwing off the wall.
Yeah. Stuff, yeah. Right.
So people on Twitter earlier basically told me running a fish store sounds boring, but a pet shop is interesting. But that still seems a little boring to me. So I started thinking more, and if we're already going crazy with genetics and things like that, maybe it is a weird, bizarre pet store where you're mixing monkeys with rabbits and you're just like meshing animals together to fill these weird, bizarre orders. It could be a wizard that's doing this. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I like that a lot.
That's fun.
I think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly that sounds fun to draw.
Like, it sure
what
does.
What would a lobster monkey look like? So yeah. That could be something. I don't know.
That could be a lot of fun. Yeah. Like the wizard's shop or the wizard's pet store, or, you know, you could make it just monsters, you know, the monster store.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The chimera shop or something.
But yeah. The wizard would be fun because you're using science, like Punnett squares, but it's a wizard.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Right.
He's mixing ingredients to affect these creatures.
It would take some of the. I don't ever try to make serious games. I always try to throw humor and stuff into my games. Anyways, it's just kind of what I default to.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Really? Because Ghosts Love Candy felt like a Euro to me. Cubes in it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Now I kind of want to make that version. The super straight lace, just as boring as you could make it version of Ghost Love Candy.
You'd have to call it like Das Ghost.
Das Ghost Enjoy Sweets.
Right on. Cool. So with these squares, I want to get my head around the dice a little bit. So on a basic level, you're saying blue and brown, okay? And so Dad has blue and brown, and Mom has blue and blue. If baby ends up with blue and blue, then so baby is more likely to end up with blue and blue than blue and brown, and is going to get blue eyes. But baby is also there's a chance that baby will get blue and brown and will have brown eyes. But if Mom and Dad both have blue and brown, they would both have brown eyes, but there's still a slim chance that baby might end with blue and blue and have blue eyes anyway.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. So when you're rolling dice, would each face of the die be a different color? And would that determine what color you are, you're ending up with? Or would the number of the die indicate how much influence that specific color has on the outcome?
The way I have it right now is that they are custom die or like sticker die. If you're talking about the Game Crafter.
Okay.
And they would have the mom and the dad would have, one gene like on the left side to represent the dominant and then the right side. And so you basically have a die that tells you take the left one or the right one from this parent. 'Cause there's a die that matches the mom's card and one that matches the dad's.
Okay.
Cool. That makes sense.
So each face of the die is going to have blue and brown on it, or brown and brown, or blue and blue.
Right. Or it just corresponds to, we'll break it down to left gene from mom, right gene from dad.
Okay.
And then there's also a couple of, I just put a couple of question marks for now. So if that rolls up, you get to choose, which obviously does not happen in real life, but it's a game. Sure. So you want to have fun.
Yeah, that's right. You need
where
some
the
choice.
Magic happens.
You need some
that's
choice.
Where, yes, yeah. That's the magic.
That would actually be cool. Like you've got genes, and then magic.
Right. Just confuse everyone. Yeah.
You could make it like a post-apocalyptic game and the wild card could be radiation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Oh, can we start making Ninja Turtles? Because that'd be awesome. Man.
That would be great. I love Ninja Turtles.
Oh, who doesn't? If you don't love Ninja Turtles, you're a jerk.
Yes, it's true.
That's right.
Yeah.
However, have you seen the screenshots for the new movie? How awkward it looks at the guys in the suits before they put the CG on?
Yeah.
Did you guys, not to diverge too much from our normal topics, but did you guys see who they got to play Shredder?
Yeah.
Do you not like William Finchner?
Oh, I love
William Finchner. And I have every belief that he will be awesome as Shredder, even though he's not Asian.
I think it's Fichtner. I think it's Fichtner. William Fichtner?
It's Finchner.
Is it?
Pretty sure.
Danny, can you weigh in on this?
I'm not sure. I didn't really recognize him too much. I'm not sure where else he's from when I saw his picture. It didn't ring any bells for me.
He's been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
He was in The Dark Knight.
Right. He's the bank manager who gets shot. At the beginning of The Dark Knight.
He was originally in the film Go a long time ago. He was the guy selling Amway. The awesome Michael Bay film Armageddon.
Yep.
He was the NASA space pilot. I guess you could call him an astronaut, but space pilot sounds way more awesome.
Sure.
He's a pretty cool actor, so who's done some good stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. I don't know about Shredder, though.
Yeah, I read the thing where they asked him, and he was like, really? Me? Yeah. Okay. Have you seen the previews for The Lone Ranger?
No, I haven't.
He's the bad guy in The Lone Ranger. You'd never know it was him.
Okay.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
Right on.
Complete metamorphosis.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, so games.
Back to games.
Let's design a game about mocap suits.
There you go.
I think it would... Yeah, okay. The number one mechanic is it's tight and uncomfortable and looks weird.
Right.
And you have to wear them when you play the game.
Right, right. Okay, good stuff. Okay, so what is your name for this game, for this amorphous unknown game right now?
Right now there's not. I guess so far the one that from an art standpoint, which is usually where I start my design process, anyways. The drawing the mixed animals thing sounds the most fun to me. So Merlin's messed up pet shop.
There we go. I love it.
Sold. All right.
Sold. $100,000 on Kickstarter. Easy.
You got it.
Probably not.
Miniatures. Cool. I got it made.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Right. You're going to have to add miniatures.
You snap on the lobster claws to the rabbit or the monkey.
I would buy that game.
I totally would.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You would need like a little armature with different snap on, like ball joint things you could snap on to different appendages.
Right. You know,
call Cool Mini or not, make that happen.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, you talked about getting advice from this on Twitter. I saw who was giving you advice, and one of the people was AJ from Van Ryder Games. That dude gives terrible advice. Don't listen to anything he says. I'm only saying that because he's listening to this right now, and he's tweeting me right now. Insulting me. No, I mean, he will be when he's hearing this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Well, hey. Let's recap here. Mob Town coming soon from Fifth Street Games. Do you guys have a release date on that yet?
Not yet. We're actually still developing. I actually, if you got a second, I have an interesting tidbit on that.
Yeah, go for it.
Something that was interesting about that was the version that was put into the contest and the one I've been developing this whole time. Well, cause I was talking to Phil the whole time it was being developed,
mm-hmm.
was when you build the city, you leave it for the entire game. You basically play three rounds, but you are playing off the same city. So properties are getting more and more expensive as you go on and things like that. When Phil got the copy of the prototype, I'd either miswrote a rule or he had misread a rule, and he was rebuilding the city every round.
Oh.
Which made for a lot of confusing conversations between the two of us. We didn't understand. We'd be like, this is a problem with my group. And I'm like, I don't even understand what you're talking about. But once it finally clicked that we were playing two different games, it was pretty interesting to see how functional it was with a very core thing of it being played differently.
Oh, that's interesting.
That is cool.
So we ended up swapping. We did a rule swap, and although the version that I had been working with still functions and everything, one of the things that people really like to see is when the map is built. And with Phil's version of that, you get to see it three times, which is fun.
That's cool.
That is cool.
Plus it saves on you're placing poker chips as you go and you leave them there. So in my version, every player needed about 25. And in the version now, everyone needs about 10 because you basically reset every round and you're in a new city.
Right on.
Unless you want hidden scoring.
Unless you want hidden scoring, yeah. I'll talk him into that now.
Nice. That's really interesting. We're always interested to hear about how things like that evolve and how rules change and things. That's good to know. Just by simply misunderstanding some rules, it totally changed the way you play the game.
Right, and it still functions both ways. So, I mean, all it takes is a rule variant and a few more chips, and you can play a different way.
Very cool.
But we're still kind of hammering out the fine details now that we're finally on the same page. So we're getting that all locked in, and I don't know an exact release date yet for the Kickstarter campaign.
Okay. Well, where can our listeners go to keep their eyes on that and listen for it?
I would say the best place is I'm pretty consistent with Twitter now.
Okay.
So following on Twitter, I try to keep, I know, like you guys have said, you've seen a couple of the sketches and stuff. I'm trying to throw stuff up when I get permission to do so. And I'd say Twitter is probably the best place to get news on that.
Okay. And your Twitter handle is?
@3ddivine.
Excellent. @3ddivine. Excellent.
Yes.
And Ghost Love Candy, we can also watch your Twitter account there for more updates on that good stuff.
Right. I'm hoping to put that on the Game Crafter. Once I start getting the art for Mobtown wrapped up, I'm going to finalize the art, whatever it ends up being, for Ghost Love Candy and get it on Game Crafter.
Oh, cool. Very cool. And, of course, if anybody is coming to Gen Con, now I understand you can't make a Gen Con, right?
Unfortunately, no, it's not in the budget this year.
That's too bad. But if anybody wants to check out your amazing artwork, they can find me at Gen Con, and I would be happy to demo Game of Rocket Wreckers for you and enjoy your amazing, incredible artwork for that. So thank you again for helping me with that. I really, really appreciate that. You okay?
No problem.
You just dropped something there?
my wife and kid just got home, so
oh, okay.
All the noise is coming to the house.
All right. Well, say hello to them for us, please.
All right.
I think that's... Have I forgotten... What have I forgotten to ask you about, I should say?
Boy. I think we got it covered.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Danny, for hanging out with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Good, good. And I guess to all of our listeners, thank you guys for hanging out with us and listening to the show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can also send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin, and I am @poorly_designed. And once again, Danny is @3ddivine. You can like us on Facebook. We're still trying to get to 100 likes, so help us do that, please. You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And I want to throw a reminder out here one more time for our events at Gen Con. We've got our Podcasting 101 panel. That's going to be on Friday at 2 p.m. Game ID for that is SEM1342722. We've got our First Time Game Designers Workshop. And by the way, tickets for that are quickly selling out. So get on there and get your tickets pretty soon. That's going to be on Friday at Gen Con at 4 o'clock. And that's SEM1342723. And our biggest exciting event is Building the Game Live, our big live show that's going to be on Saturday at 2 p.m. The event for that is SEM1342720. Of course, all people who want to join us for those events are welcome. You do not need a ticket to get in the door. However, if you could get those tickets in advance, reserve them through the Gen Con website. That just gives us a better idea of how many people are going to be there, so we're better prepared for the show. Have I forgotten anything, Jason?
I think you mostly covered it.
Okay. Thank you again, Danny.
Thank you very much.
No problem. And thank you, listeners. We'll talk to you next time.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Okay, and we're out.
Okay.
Cool, that was fun.
Good, good. Glad you enjoyed it.
Hopefully it went okay.
Oh yeah, I think it was great.
All right, sweet.
As soon as you have a proto of Ghost Love Candy, I would love to give it a try, man.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I had a fun playing Rocket Wreckers too. It's fun being able to exchange prototypes with, you know, people you're conversating with and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. If you have a print and play for that, I'd love to try it. Or yeah, I can wait for it to be on GameCrafter. I'd love to pick up a copy from there too. Whatever you like.
I'm trying to figure out how to do a print and play with the whole thing with the cubes, because not everyone has colored cubes. So I'm trying to figure out a way to.
We have colored cubes, Danny.
Yeah, right. We do. I mean, we're those kinds of nerds.